Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden has been a fixture in law enforcement here for years. He spent most of his career, 36 years, with the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department, including 27 years as a detective and 20 years in the homicide unit. He ran for sheriff and unseated an incumbent, an immigration hardliner, promising to end cooperation with Immigration and Customs Enforcement's 287G program, in which the department would turn information about undocumented immigrants in the jail over to ICE. And once in office, that is exactly what he did, which has put him in the bullseye of political controversy. Today, we talk about why he felt so strongly about ending that cooperation, what the impact has been on him and his department. We talk about other changes that he's made in the operation of the jails, and we get his insight on Charlotte's gun and homicide problem. Gary McFadden, Sheriff Gary McFadden, is here in the studio at Spirit Square. Welcome back to the program. Good to see you.
Well, thank you for having me back.
If folks would like to join us, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. As I said, you and six other elected sheriffs around the state in the last election in urban areas won on the promise, I think, won in part on the promise of ending cooperation with ICE on 287G. Remind us, why was ending that voluntary participation with ICE important to you?
Well, I'm glad you said the word voluntarily, because that's what it was. It's a thing that federal government came to and said, would you like to participate in it? Other sheriffs had their opinion of why they did, and I had my opinion why I didn't. My opinion was that it did not build trust in the community. The communities of immigration were afraid to report crimes. They were being victimized in crimes. There were witnesses who would not come forward. I know that because when I went out to investigate crimes with CMPD, they were very reluctant. So imagine when we were talking about other communities says no snitching. Other communities says I'm afraid. So it didn't bring any trust with the community. And I think that we still can work with federal agencies without this 287G. And one misconception that has always been stated that we end our cooperation with ICE. We just modified it. We did not end it. And we still cooperate with them, but maybe not at the level they believe that we should cooperate with them, but we still do cooperate with them.
So this was about building trust in the immigrant community. Now that you've ended your voluntary participation in 287G, has that trust been built? Do you see signs that they are more or are less reluctant to talk to you?
They're willing to talk to me. I go to them. They come to me. We share ideas. I go to their churches. I try to build the trust that I believe that every community leader needs to do, to go to communities who do not trust law enforcement, who does not trust their leaders. And I've been invited to multiple events by the Latino community, and I think the trust is being built. It's just that we still have this barrier between us of being in fear and being threatened by ICE.
Where trust has been rebuilt, what has been the upshot of it? What's been the result of it?
Conversations. Conversation of what we can do with us. How can we work better in the community? Change our language with our brochures. Make them in Spanish. Invite them into our homes and our offices. And they invite me into their homes and their offices. And so that's called building trust, that I believe.
There are those who are very much opposed to what you and the six other sheriffs who were elected on this promise, of ending 287G. There are those who say that you have made these communities, this community, less safe. I know you disagree with that. Tell me why.
Well, I think these are people who have not been in, I believe, in the trenches that I have. I'm speaking from experience. I'm speaking from 37 years of law enforcement experience. Those people say that, but there's many of those people say that we are building trust and we are making the community safer. So it's a conversation that we need to have with those people who believe and who don't believe. I don't have a problem with them believing that we're making the community unsafe. Show me the numbers. I don't think the numbers will show us that.
Well, Kirk Putney, the chief of police, you and other sheriffs around the area and other law enforcement, local law enforcement people have said that this is making us safer. Then you have national law enforcement, ICE and others, who is, and politicians, who are saying, no, you're making us far less safe. What are we supposed to make of this as citizens?
You have to think about it's political. If you said the word politicians and national, well, sometimes you have to come down to the local level and work on the local streets, know the street names, know the people, know the communities, know the churches, know the businesses. You're speaking from a higher level. Come down to earth, mm-hmm. or come down to the communities and work with us in the communities. That's all we're asking.
WBTV did a search and found the old 287G program under your predecessor led to hundreds of people charged with crimes in Mecklenburg County who were then deported from the country. Do you know what kinds of crimes those were?
Well, if you look at ICE's stats, which they put out every year, mm-hmm. that we fail to look at, 20,000 of those were DWIs, traffic offenses. But if you look at the numbers on down that same list, you will see approximately 300, from what I understand, is like homicides and these serious crimes. So using the word crimes mm-hmm. is very unique. So that makes people believe that they're violent crimes. But if you look at their statistics, you can go to ICE's webpage and look at their statistics and look at their numbers. The number that you see, 20,000, will be traffic offenses.
Well, last month, ICE held a week-long national sweep of undocumented immigrants with criminal records, including here in Mecklenburg County. I know you know about this. They made 32 arrests here without the cooperation of your office. And Tim Robbins, a senior ICE official, told the media that his office was unable to arrest all the individuals they were targeting because you did not honor ICE detainers. He called your approach dangerous and reckless.
Numerous criminal offenders remain at large that we couldn't find and couldn't arrest. Those criminal aliens remain in your community where they are free to commit more crimes, all because the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office chose to knowingly and willingly release a criminal back into the community instead of calling ICE.
That audio was courtesy of the Charlotte Observer. And then when Ken Cuccinelli, the acting director of United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, was in Charlotte last month, he spoke to the media and he criticized you again for your refusal to honor jail detainers from the federal government.
He's literally releasing child rapists and sexual abusers. I mean, this is unbelievable. Attempted murder. I'm just going back like a year or two in this county. This is not, you know, the 1980s. This is last year. This is 2019.
Why are they wrong?
Well, are they arresting people on warrants or are they arresting people on detainers? If they bring me a warrant, or if they have criminal charges on these individuals, we will arrest them. These are not criminal warrants. These are detainers that they are detaining people and importing people. And I think that's where we miss this misconception about all of this. If ICE has these people that they believe that is dangerous, put a warrant on them. That warrant will go into NCIC, and anybody, including my Mecklenburg County Sheriff's deputies, will stop one of these people on the street.
Why don't they do it that way?
Well, that's something that they have been dodging for the whole time.
Well, let's get back to something that Ken Cuccinelli alleges. He says that you are, quote, literally releasing child rapists and sexual abusers. Is he lying?
Well, here's what he doesn't know, or maybe he does not understand. The sheriff does not release these people. Once a person has met their conditions of their bond, and a judge sees that they fulfilled the conditions of their bond by law, then I have to release them. If they believe that these people are dangerous, I have 460 federal inmates in the Mecklenburg County Detention Center as of today that came to us, with a legal document signed by a judge. That is the only thing that I'm asking. If they believe that these people are dangerous and they believe that these people will cause harm in the community, and they have the ability to sign a warrant on these people, then I'll be glad to hold them.
So you say the problem is not with your department or your office. The problem is elsewhere. It's with them, ICE. It's with the courts. It's with other law enforcement agencies. In August, a Honduran fugitive was released from the Mecklenburg County Jail after being arrested on rape and child sex abuse or offense charges. But a charge is not a conviction, and he was released after he paid the $100,000 bond set by the courts.
Correct.
So when that happens, let's take ICE out of the picture here. This is an American, let's say this guy is an American born and bred citizen who's arrested on those charges, put in your jail with a $100,000 bond, which he then comes up with, which means what? You have to release him, correct?
That's correct.
So if you take immigration out of the picture, that's the law. Does the law change when you put undocumented immigrants into the picture?
They still have their rights, and if they meet the criteria of the bond and the conditions of their bond, then there should be release. With the person that we are absolutely talking about here, this person who is rapist, let's look at this a little bit more deeper.
Okay.
ICE arrested the same person in 2006. He was deported. Not arrested, or whatever they did. Mm-hmm. They deported him back to his country in 2006. In 2016, he entered the United States border. ICE captured him at the border, but a law called the Flores Settlement allowed him back into the United States with a child. June 12th, he's captured. June 16th, he says, I'm coming back to Charlotte. They, ICE, puts an ankle bracelet on him. He cuts the ankle bracelet off. But ICE told him to report to ICE's headquarters in Charlotte on June 22nd. So they knew where he was. He was in Mecklenburg County. Mm-hmm. Once he cut off his ankle bracelet, it alerted them that he cut off his ankle bracelet in Mecklenburg County. Cooperation should have been, you now have a fugitive or dangerous person in your county. That did not happen. So then for 3 years, he should be classified as a federal fugitive, or they could charge him with illegal reentry. That's a charge. They could go and find a federal complaint with a federal judge and charge this young man. But they simply didn't. So while he's here for 3 years, then he allegedly committed this crime. Now they're yelling foul.
You're shining a mirror back up on the people who are pointing fingers at you here. These are federal officials. These are federal law enforcement officials. How can they? This sounds ignorant to me. So how can they be this ignorant?
Well, the system is broken. It is.
Well, the immigration system.
The immigration system is broken.
But these are laws. This is the way law enforcement operates everywhere in the country. Why aren't they operating the way law enforcement operates everywhere in the country?
Because it's easy to point a finger. It's easy to point a finger and say he's not doing his job. Simply, we go back to this young man. Simply think about this. If they had to file a federal complaint on this young man after he cut off his ankle bracelet in 2016, would we be talking about him today?
So we have the situation that you just outlined with ICE and cutting off the bracelet and not alerting law enforcement that you now have a dangerous fugitive in your midst. But he ends up in your jail anyway, and the courts say if you pay $100,000, he can get out, and he does, and you have to let him out because that's the law. Why isn't ICE going to the courts and saying, hey, this guy is dangerous, he's done this, he's done that. Don't put the bond at $100,000. Don't let him out. Give him to us. Why aren't the courts turning them over to ICE themselves?
Well, I'm not sure why they're not doing that. That is something that ICE and the federal government should consider. These are conversations that we need to have. But simply by pointing fingers at federal law enforcement and local law enforcement now is not working.
Sheriff Gary McFadden is our guest. He's the Mecklenburg County Sheriff. We're going to talk about a lot of different things, but we're also going to go through this ICE thing with a fine-tooth comb because that seems to be the sticky wicket. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden, who ran on, among other things, a promise to end the voluntary cooperation his office had been participating in with ICE called 287G. That's one of the first things he did. He's done a lot of other things in the jail, which we'll talk about, which he did, I think, a lot of them in the first 35 days, which was a long time ago. So we'll get an update on where things stand on all of that. But this ICE thing is an ongoing story here and around the country, and you've kind of become the poster child for this within political forces operating in the Trump administration. Let's go back to this situation where you have you feel you have to, because the law says you have to, release somebody because the court says release them. So if these people are dangerous, why doesn't ICE go to the courts, talk to the judges, have them cooperate with ICE directly and not give bail to people or have them turn the inmates that have been convicted over to ICE directly? Why do they have to go through a middleman, you?
Well, the question is, did you prepare for this? I don't think ICE prepared for it. I don't think that the federal government prepared for this. I don't think they looked at all the things that would happen. We have a different bail bond policy now in Mecklenburg. It came in effect, I believe, in January. So that's totally different. I think that it takes more.
And stop there just for a second. The new bail bond policy is set up to protect indigent people who cannot afford bail to get out under certain circumstances. But this $100,000 bond, that's not something that would be set for an indigent person.
Well, no. And so then instead of talking to the Mecklenburg County Sheriff, uh-huh. This is when you need to be talking to the magistrates and the judges. This is the conversation that they need to have with them.
So this is a case where local jurisdictions who have their own sets of rules, regulations, and laws are doing things that perhaps ICE is unaware of, locale to locale, jurisdiction to jurisdiction?
No, they are aware of it. I think they are simply trying to go around that.
Okay.
And see, most people think that we are not cooperating with ICE, and I want to make sure that we say that 100,000 times. We are mandated by law, and every sheriff in North Carolina is mandated by law. North Carolina General Statute 162.62 mandates us to cooperate with ICE. So we do cooperate with ICE. The only thing that changed with 287G and the Mecklenburg County Sheriff's Office is that ICE does not operate inside my facility.
Right.
That's the only thing that's different. So when a person is arrested that we cannot determine their immigration status,
right,
we ask them the two questions. And when those two questions are no, that they're not a citizen of the United States, and no, this is not their natural born country, we then contact ICE and tell them that here's a person in the Mecklenburg County Detention Center that we cannot determine their citizenship. Okay. At that point, knowing good and well that I'm not going to send a detainer, the game is played. Then you send a detainer. I don't have the information that they have in their data system. I don't have that. I don't have access to it. The gentleman that we always talk about, the gentleman that's been charged with the sexual offense, they knew he cut off his bracelet. I didn't. They knew that he was deported in 2006. I didn't. Even when we called them that day or notified them that day, they have all this information in their database.
Why aren't they sharing this?
Well,
if they want your cooperation, why aren't they sharing?
Well, this is what we ask all the time. People say, why aren't you cooperating with ICE? I'm doing what I'm mandated to do.
Because Tim Robbins, who's that senior ICE official that I referred to and we heard from earlier in the program, gave another example of another undocumented immigrant arrested while driving while intoxicated. ICE lodged a detainer. And we're going to talk about the difference between 287G and detainers in a minute. But they lodged a detainer. It was ignored. In June, that same immigrant was arrested again for other crimes, including assault on a female, assault with a deadly weapon, and another DUI. And you have said that you are following state law by releasing these people without notifying ICE. So was that the case here? And if you can, explain that. What does that mean, you're following state law?
Well, I'm mandated by state law to notify ICE this person is in jail. That's the 162.62. Now, when state law says this person has already met all the conditions of their bond, then I'm supposed to release him.
Mm-hmm.
Simply, a detainer is a request. The detainer is an ask. The detainer is not a law. It is not signed by a judicial official. a judicial official has not looked at this. This, the Tanner thing puts us in a category of, do they have probable cause? And also, does it expose the sheriff's office to legal issues, which it does?
So as you have said, detainers are not criminal warrants. They are simply requests from ICE. Could detainers come from other arms of law enforcement as well?
Sure. I'm sure they could.
So these detainers, and you're not honoring any of them?
No, we do not honor detainer. We honor criminal warrants.
Warrants, okay. So these detainers are simply requests for what? For you to hold them in jail a little longer till they can come and get them, or what?
Just hold them in jail if they come and get them.
If they come and get them. So if they're not criminal warrants, and you would honor a criminal warrant, is that correct?
That is correct.
Why don't they issue a criminal warrant?
That is the issue, and that's the question I've been asking, and that's what I have been suggesting.
I mean, if they really want you to do this, if they really want these people turned over to them for deportation or whatever, why not do it? They have the authority to do it, right?
They do.
They have to go to a judge to get the warrant, right?
Correct.
Are judges likely or unlikely to issue the warrant?
Well, I think that the judges are unlikely.
Because?
Because of error, because of probable cause, because of the database.
How much of it has to do with also in the American system of justice, you are innocent until you are proven guilty?
Well, I believe that you still can get a warrant.
Okay.
And we arrest a lot of people. I have arrested a lot of people on warrants, and then it's up to the courts, the justice system, to prove that.
So if there's something standing in the way of their issuing a warrant, it's the court system?
I believe it's the facts. I believe it's the facts that you can present to a federal judge. The time, the facts, the resources, and everything else could be a barrier.
So is this something, and I know you were not with the sheriff's department in the Obama administration. You were with the CMPD and retired and doing many other things. But is this a new approach on the part of the federal government, on the part of ICE, in getting people that they'd like to see deported out of the country? Is this a different way of doing business that came in with the Trump administration?
I think it's a most aggressive and harsher way.
But they're not dotting their I's and crossing their T's. They're just doing it.
I don't believe so. I don't believe so.
Why are there only six sheriffs in Mecklenburg County, or seven, who feel the way you do?
No, I think some people feel the way I do. I think more than people feel the way I do is there's sheriffs across the country. I think that the sheriff who were targeted of all African-American descent, and I believe that we came in with a different agenda. We are more progressive, and there are many sheriffs across the country are experiencing the same thing that I'm experiencing. We are going to be targeted. Mm-hmm. But it's a bully effect. You know, all you're saying is, would you cooperate with me? Yes. But I'm not going to be bullied into anything. And I think that if it's a voluntary program, I should be able to say whether I volunteer to have it or not. This shouldn't be the bully on the playground.
Could the federal government pass a law that says you must do this?
Sure they
could.
And
if they did that, would you do it?
I would abide by the law each and every time. And that's what, if they want this to work, then they change the law. Mm-hmm. And then I will go with the law. I'm not going to break the law, and I'm not going to go against the law.
So at a recent press conference, a reporter from WBTV asked you this question. Why don't you just give ICE a call and say, hey, we're releasing this person from the detention center? And you responded, why won't ICE follow the law? And then the reporter asked, how are they breaking the law? To which you asked, how am I breaking the law? So let's go back to the first question. Why don't you give ICE a call and give them a heads up about you're about to release an inmate with an ICE detainer? They've given you the detainer. You decided not to honor it, but you're about to release them because the court says you have to. Why not call them and say, I'm going to do it? They're walking out today at 2 o'clock.
That's trust. It's back to trust. And then if I'm going to create a problem outside my detention center every day. Think about it. I'm letting the guy out. They're going to know that the guy is like at a bank. The guy's going to come out the back door with the money every day. There's going to be a conflict. There's going to be a problem. And then we're going to go back to trust. Why don't we simply do this? Like my 460 inmates or residents that I have at the Mecklenburg County Jail that are all under federal custody, mm-hmm. Why don't you simply bring me a paper and you don't have to worry about letting them out the back of the jail.
The other sheriffs who ran for office at, around North Carolina at, in the urban counties the same time you did, and who also won and who also ran on this promise to end cooperation with 287G, are they also not honoring ICE detainers?
I don't think none of them are.
None of them are.
I don't think none. Maybe
for
one
the, for the same reasons. Do you talk well, amongst each other?
We talk about our problems. We talk about our differences. And we talked about how we are being targeted as sheriffs for the very first time in America. The sheriffs are being targeted for a reason of standing their ground, wanting to abide by the law and build trust. So it's difficult. It's difficult for all of us.
So ICE spokesman Brian Cox asked, if you have an inmate who is a violent criminal offender and a public safety threat, and there's another law enforcement agency out there who wants to take that person into custody, why in the world would you want that person out on the streets? Good question. What's the answer?
We don't want them out on the streets. If this person is a violent person and this person has caused problems and you have the means of putting a warrant on that person, please do so, and we will arrest him.
So I asked you earlier in this conversation if your ending 287G had helped you to start rebuilding trust in the immigrant community. And I'm going to ask you if this refusal to honor detainers and conversations like the one we're having now and what you and the attacks that you've – not the attacks, but the – well, they are attacks.
They are attacks.
They are attacks that you've been – you've endured because of your refusal to work with ICE on these things that you feel are not within the bounds of the law. Is that helping to build trust within the immigrant community?
Well, I think it does. It absolutely does for me. And I think that we can build trust in all communities if the citizens simply create platforms to allow me – and other law enforcement to explain our position. We don't even get the chance to. We're being criticized without even having a conversation with us. We get threats that we shouldn't receive as law enforcement, but that's just the nature of the beast. And
threats from whom?
Citizens. It's become a very volatile thing with me. You know, we say trust, yeah, the community trusts me, but I also have now, because of this, exposed myself to violent threats. Violent threats every week, I would say, by letter, by phone, by personal conversations. And so I think that it's an issue that needs to be addressed, but you have to have a platform to talk on.
You also bring up a point that if you and sheriffs like you cooperated with the 287G program and honored these detainers, that ICE would take these people, who some of whom have, in fact, committed crimes within the United States, they would take these people and deport them, and therefore they would not serve time for their crimes in the United States, and maybe not at all, because maybe the countries to which they are being deported are not going to punish them for their crimes. Which is more important, seeing that people get punished for the crimes they commit while they're here, or getting them out?
Well, I think you would should ask that to the victims of these crimes that we have in Charlotte. Think about this. The victims that are being victimized by the undocumented immigrant sees it in the news. It's a big news story. He assaulted me. He chokes me. He does all these things to me, and it's a big news story. But once ICE deports them out of the United States, they have never been convicted of these crimes. They never face their accuser. And you leave the victim saying, well, wow, this person can commit all these crimes, be on TV, assault me, choke me, have a nine-hour standoff, but ICE is going to deport him, and he never faces these crimes. And think about this. The charges against these deported individuals are dropped. So the victims, you left the victims here in Mecklenburg County saying, well, if you really was concerned about me, why don't we charge this person with this crime of assaulting me? Let's charge this person with the standoff. Let's charge the person with all the crimes that we have on this nine-hour standoff. Or are we simply going to say, let us charge him and deport him back to the country? So which is more important? Because deporting them, we have seen that they will come back.
This whole issue is wickedly difficult for people to understand, I think, in many ways. So We've given you an opportunity to explain your point of view on this, and what you're saying, but I heard you say, is that your voluntary cooperation with ICE on the 287G program and honoring detainers which are not legal warrants puts you and your office in jeopardy because you would be breaking the law by following these procedures. And that some of these people may or may not be guilty. I mean, they are accused. They are not convicted yet because they're in the jail waiting for their trials. So there's that. But then when you know somebody is here without documentation, when you know they have either come in illegally across the border without going through normal channels, when you know that they maybe have overstayed their visas, they've broken the law.
That is correct.
So as a law enforcement officer, aren't you bound to enforce the law?
After that paper, after the federal government or the federal official says this is a federal law that it has broken, immigration is a federal issue. It's not a state issue. They have broken a federal law. They have.
But if you had somebody in your jail who you knew was a suspect in a kidnapping, which is against federal law, what would your process be? Would you let them go? Would you ignore the FBI's request to keep them? What would you do? How would it be different if you took immigration out of the picture?
I know that a person has committed a murder that is now arrested in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I believe that all my investigation shows that that person committed my crime. If I tell South Carolina just to hold him, mm-hmm. they will not hold him.
Okay.
You know what they would ask me to do? Put a warrant on him. Put him in NCIC, the national database, that we can see it, and we will keep him for you till you get here. That is going back to them. If you know that a person is here, and if you have the documentation to show that the person is here, and you can say that the person has violated this federal law of reentry or entering the United States, it goes back. That is a federal crime. But how I can be cooperative, you put a federal paper on him signed by a federal judge, and I will assist you on keeping him at the Mecklenburg County Jail.
So Dave emails, my understanding, Dave's understanding, is that participation in the 287G program allows the sheriff access to the database that ICE has collected. The access expedites their ability to make determinations about the appropriate placement of inmates within the jail. Am I mistaken?
Well, they do. They have that.
You don't get access to it once they... If you participate in 287G?
I call them, and they verify this in their database. We don't have that database.
Okay.
They have the database.
We're going to move on to other topics.
Sure.
When we come back from the break. But I want to take a swish broom here and
okay.
clean this up a little bit more when we come back. And I have some listener comments and questions that I want you to have a crack at answering. Gary McFadden is the Mecklenburg County Sheriff. We're talking about 287G and criminal detainers and ICE and a lot more coming up at Charlotte Talks.
Hey, y'all, this is Tommy Tomlinson. On this week's episode of Southbound, we talked to Morris Manning, a Kentucky poet and Pulitzer Prize finalist who has a new book of poems written in the voice of Abraham Lincoln. You can find this and every episode of Southbound on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, and WFAE.org.
Support for Southbound comes from Southeast Radiation Oncology Group.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Sheriff Gary McFadden is our guest. He's the sheriff for Mecklenburg County. We've been spending most of the time talking about ICE and his interface with ICE, or lack of interface with ICE. You'd like to have a conversation with ICE. Will they not sit down with you?
We had a conversation after the news conference, and it's going to take more than me and one or two people to fix this broken issue. I think it's a national issue.
Yeah.
I have asked national law enforcement agencies, sheriff associations, say, listen, let's form a think tank or a committee. And I'll be on that committee because you made me a face of that, of ICE. And let's look towards working towards a solution good for everyone. And I'm still waiting for that. And that's what we're asking for. It's a broken system. We can see that. And so what we need to do is say, okay, let's be honest with each other. Nothing is working. So let's talk about it.
The president ran in part, and in large part won, I think, on his promise to build a wall to end this illegal immigration problem that the United States has had for years and continues to have. You ran on a promise to end cooperation with 287G, among other things, and in large part, I think you and the five or six other sheriffs in North Carolina's urban counties also won in large part on that promise. How can you both be right? How can both you and the president be right?
Well, the person wants a wall built. He sees his wall. He wants his wall. That will stop what he wants to believe. I have my beliefs in believing that what I'm doing is building trust in the community. He wants a wall, and I want trust. I think we're both right. He wants a wall. Why he wants the wall, I have no idea.
Well, if you fix the federal immigration system, which is clearly broken, and we've been talking about this for years, if the federal government could get its act together and fix that, you wouldn't have this problem.
You're probably right. They have. Think about this. Four people have ran Homeland Security since the president there. Nobody's staying for the 4 or 5 years. Nobody's staying for the 4 years. Simply saying, let's create a task force. We could talk about this. We spent all morning here. I'm going to spend all – I spent my whole year in office defending myself with ICE.
Right.
We have greater things to talk about. So let's create a committee, and let's create a think tank nationally and put it together and says, we know it's broken. Let's see what else we can come up with. Simply forcing us to do this or bullying us is not working. Simply having Raleigh and these other states trying to create a law – you know, overnight because ICE goes to them and says, help us fight these guys, are not working. We have seen this. We are becoming political pawns, people using us just for political pawns. They have no other ground to stand on but immigration. So this is a big issue. This is a big problem. So let's create something that we can all come to the room and at least work on this. If not, we're still going to be back and forth with all of this.
So I want to move on to other things.
Yes, please do.
But before I do, Gil on Facebook says, it's amazing when elected officials play victim and martyr to their own poor decisions. He is choosing to not assist federal officials in securing our communities, putting all of us at risk due to his personal political dogma, cherry-picking what he likes and what he doesn't like.
Read the law, Gil. Read the law. Okay. That's what I would tell Gil.
Okay. This is just one of the things that you've done.
Really?
Since taking office. But you've instituted a lot of other changes, other programs, like reinstituting face-to-face visitation, which had stopped before your election, of people in jail, ending juvenile solitary confinement. You've added contact visits for kids. If their father or mother are in jail, they can actually go in and touch them and talk to them. We haven't heard as much about those things. What has been the outcome of all those changes?
Human contact is important. Human contact builds love. It builds understanding. And I think that solitary confinement hurt our juveniles. Our juveniles here in Mecklenburg County didn't even come outside for 19 years.
And when we talk about juveniles, how old are we talking?
16, 17 years old.
So they didn't come outdoors?
They never came outdoors for 19 years. Is that harming our juveniles? Yes.
So from 17 to whatever you add 19 to, that's when they stayed inside because they went to prison?
No. When they're here being detained in Mecklenburg County, while they're in the jail, we call it a detention center, they didn't get a chance to come outside.
For 19 years of the existence of the program. Okay.
Correct.
These 17-year-olds were cooped up inside. Well, now you've instituted this thing called Camp Cradle Outdoor Summer Sports Activities.
Right.
Is that to get them outside?
It is to get them outside. Why? Because they need outside. They need outdoors. Does it help us inside? Yes. It helps on de-escalating conflict. You know, you're cooped up and you come outside just like anything else. You know, when you get outside, you're going to have some fun. You're going to have a great time. So we believe that it helps our young people. It helps them establish a bond. It helps us to establish talking to our staff. It helps. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, it helps.
You're also offering an opportunity for young men, not only, and I guess it's just a young man, it could be young women too, I don't know, you tell me, to learn a skill and to get their barbering license so that when they get out of jail, they have a viable way to earn a living. And that's through a cooperation with Sean Corbett's Cops and Barbers program. How many young people have been through that program so far?
Well, we have five young men inside the barber school now. Believe it or not, it takes about, I think it's like about 1,500 hours to acquire your barber's license. So it's just not something that you do overnight. And so I spoke with four of the young men last week. They reached a critical stage. They're learning now how to create their own platform. They create their own brochures. They create their own business models. So we are training young men to be productive citizens.
So are these guys in jail long enough for them to have 1,500 hours of training, or do they then get out and continue their training through the Cops and Barbers program?
A beautiful thing is that we have worked with an organization called Charlotte Works, NC Works. They have been tremendous in helping us. So if they do not finish their hours here inside the Mecklenburg County Detention Center, they go out to a barber college, and we work with the barber college, No Grease and some others here in the city, and we work where they get their hours. And so once they complete their hours, pass the state exam, they become licensed barbers.
I have to ask, do you let them practice on you?
I'm bald, but no, I would. I would. I would.
I was going to add, maybe that's why you're bald. Not everybody has the talent or the desire to be a barber, but you've done other things. You've brought in this career fair into the detention center. How do you recruit businesses willing to get involved with young people who may or may not have broken the law?
Well, here's a plug. November 18th, we're going to have another seminar to tell people why you should consider these people. The Attorney General, both North and South Carolina, stated last week, we are missing a golden opportunity to tap into these unemployments. I mean, these employment opportunities are by hiring these young men and women. So we believe that giving these men and women a chance to be productive citizen creates a better citizen, and we are preparing your neighbors.
Have either of these programs been in place long enough for you to be able to say, yes, these people got out of jail and they are now working, they're earning a living?
Yes. I have a young man, I'm not sure what he's doing today, but he was doing concrete about 2 months ago, but he's doing something else now. A young lady is working at Lowe's, and, you know, she's happy. And so we are preparing them inside through our programs, preparing them for them to have jobs. And we want these companies to take a chance on these men and women.
When you do things like this, these people get out. I mean, 95% of the people who go to prison get out. When you develop programs like this, is this another way to build trust in the community? Because now they don't just see law enforcement as the guy who's going to point a gun at them and arrest them, put handcuffs on them, stick them in the back of a patrol car and haul them off to jail. While they're in jail, they're learning to cut hair. They're learning other skills. You've helped them. Does that help build trust?
It does. Helping young men and women to see a future. You know, we can simply house them, we can simply keep them, and we can simply punish them. But at some point, they're going to get out. Mm-hmm. So how are we preparing your neighbor? Because they're going to be somebody's neighbor. You don't know who lives next door to you until you ask. You don't know who lives in your neighborhood. So we're looking at it as a way of saying, well, we are helping that person not to break in your home. Yeah. We're helping that person to not to snatch your purse. We're helping that person not to be on drugs. We are helping the economy also.
And not to have the need, it would seem to me, to snatch your purse, because a lot of these crimes are committed by people who don't have any money.
That's correct.
And who have to eat. We all have to eat.
We all do.
So what I've heard, I've never been to a prison, but what I've heard about prison is that they don't really, most prisons don't really rehabilitate anybody. They just house them until their time is up, and then they release them. Makes more sense. It has always made more sense to me.
It does.
To do something with these people so that when they get out, they don't have to rob me.
Correct.
They can earn a living.
This is where our focus is. We have another thing that called digital literacy, that we're helping men and women learn how to read, write, and work on Microsoft Suites. Again, we partner with Charlotte Works and North Carolina Works, who's fabulous. So imagine taking a computer, refurbishing that computer, learning, helping this guy to build his own resume and do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And we we simply give him that laptop when he leaves because it's refurbished. It's an old computer. But we, you know, we jazz it up and give it to him, and he becomes a productive citizen. And that is where our attention should be, right, instead of all these other things. And we, you know, we know that the thing that we just talked about for 30 minutes is broken. So, but let's fix that on another day and let's work on it. But where I want to help is helping people establish themselves back in the community. We opened a behavioral health center inside a detention center.
That's where I was going next, because even the president talks about, and he's right about this, that mental health is a problem in this country. We don't seem to want to do much about it, but it's certainly a problem. And you've opened this behavioral unit. It's the first of its kind.
Correct.
In North Carolina. Jails, I read yesterday, are on the front lines of dealing with people with mental illness and drug addiction.
People come to us broken and hurt, on drugs, and have behavioral health problems. Mm-hmm. We simply want to help those people. We simply just can't house those people and put those people back out on the street. So in my spare time, when I'm not, you know, talking about ICE and everything else, I think of other things. And this was something that was near and dear to my heart and near and dear to another sergeant there. And we talked about our family members struggling with behavioral health issues. So we simply got together and created this behavioral health unit.
How many people are in that unit because of drug addiction challenges, and how many are in there because they have mental health issues other than drug addiction?
I think it's about half of both. I visited them last week, and one young man was talking about his issues with drugs, and another young man was just talking about simply dealing with the crisis in everyday life that just came crashing down on him, and he was happy for it.
Are a lot of these behavioral or mental health issues based in anger management problems?
Well, I would say yes.
Because it seems to me that when we talk about the gun problem, that a lot of young people today are solving their problems, quote-unquote problems, by simply firing a gun, whereas 50 years ago they would have used their fists. Also not a good thing, but at least nobody died.
It's conflict. Conflict resolution. Solving your conflicts with violence.
Right.
We talk about it, and we have forums about it, but have we actually went to these communities, gone to the schools, and actually sit down with these kids, and let's talk about it? The Butler situation is still near and dear. I knew both sides of that. I spoke at the funeral of the young man who lost his life at Butler, but then I also had to house the young man who was responsible for that. He was 16 years old.
Yeah.
When he got to us. He was 17 when he was sentenced. He has a 5-year sentence. So who's going to wrap their arms around him to make sure that when he comes back to this society, he'll be a productive citizen?
Yeah.
And so is he going to deal with mental challenges? Of course. Now he's inside of a system at the age of 17 for 5 years. So he's going to come back with some issues.
So this behavioral health unit for men, as I understand it, is a voluntary program for people who have been diagnosed by a counselor. When they're taken into the jail, they have a conversation with the counselor. The counselor makes a diagnosis. It's voluntary. How many people say no? I don't want to be part of this.
I'm not sure how many say no. I know we have a lot saying yes.
How many can you handle?
We can handle 23 or 28 now. Inside this.
Is that enough?
No, it's not enough.
What do you need to make it what you need?
We need a whole center in the city of Charlotte that deals with this directly instead of housing, you know, people who believe small criminal offenses, you know, the repeat offenders who break in the same place every time.
Is that even possible?
I think if we put out, I think it, here's what I would say. Yes, it is. Money-wise, there's a machine that makes money.
You served 20 years in CMPD's homicide unit. You starred in a documentary series called I Am Homicide on the Investigation Discovery Channel. How do you explain the rising number of homicides in Charlotte?
We haven't tackled this as a community. And let me show you one thing that I look at.
Mm-hmm.
If it's homicides, we're going to say that's their problem. If it's opioid, we're going to say that's their problem. We haven't come together as a community to fully address the violence that we see every day in our schools, in our communities, in our churches, in our bars, in our nightclubs. We haven't said that. We haven't addressed that. Why? Because I can see it and feel it every day.
Who has to do it? Who has to address it?
The entire community. But we have to be consistent about it. We can have the forum when it happens. And those forums will last maybe a month or two. After that, it dies away. I think we had a forum here when we talked about it, Charlotte Talks.
We did.
In February. Mm-hmm. What happened since February?
Nothing.
Kept on being violent in the city.
Are you optimistic about that, or do you think this is just something that's going to run its course and maybe fix itself, maybe not?
It's not going to fix itself. It's not going to fix itself. We need to help it to fix itself.
Gary McFadden, the sheriff of Mecklenburg County. So much more to talk about. We're out of time, but thank you for the hour.
Thank you.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.